Hello, my name's Cliff Freilich. I'm the executive director of Cinema St. Louis, and I am joined by Joseph Paleo, who is the director of America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. This film is one that I suspect is going to be our most popular during the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase, because there's obviously huge interest in The Hill here in St. Louis, and for that matter, elsewhere. So I wanted to begin simply by asking you how you became involved in the project, why you decided to make a film on The Hill, and whether you have a direct personal connection to the place that you're recording.
Yeah, so I have a connection to The Hill because I had family members that lived on The Hill, and growing up, I used to always visit The Hill. The way that this project came about was our executive producer, Rio Vitale, had seen some of the work that I had done, and guessing my last name, seeing that I was Italian, kind of pitched me the idea on if I would be interested in making a documentary on The Hill, which I was. And that's how this project came about.
So you obviously had a good hookup through your producer in order to sort of access all the key people that you were going to need to talk to. But talk a little bit about the process of assembling the film, the identifying the people that you thought were really important to include, how you got the sort of archival materials that were going to allow you to tell the story visually and not just exclusively through interviews.
Yes. So Rio, the executive producer, he had actually written a book in 2014 about The Hill. So he had done a lot of the legwork in terms of archiving the photographs and stuff like that. So when he pitched us this idea, really it was born out of necessity, because a lot of the older generation on The Hill, a lot of these people were starting to pass away. I think before we had done the film, there had been about two or three staples of the community that had just recently passed. So there was really no time for pre-production. He kind of just pitched us the idea, do you guys want to do this documentary? And within 5 days, we've started interviewing people. So the way that we started was, it basically, if you were old and you had a connection to The Hill, we were going to interview you. There wasn't really a lot of... There wasn't like a strict guideline as to what we were trying to do. It was kind of the way that the film got its shape took place over these series of interviews. So when I started, it was basically just asking general questions and trying to find it. I did have a loose outline. I had read all the books that were available on The Hill. I read those probably within, 2 weeks. And so I kind of became an expert within those 2 weeks, so that I could have conversations with these people. And that's kind of the way that I tried to do the interview process, was more so, I'd start them off, I'd kind of like lull them into just having a conversation with me. And that's where I started to get the good stuff in the interviews. It's interviewing the people was somewhat difficult because they didn't really know what I was trying to accomplish here. I don't think anyone really knew except me and my co-producer, Steve, what I was trying to do in terms of making this for a national audience, not just for St. Louis. So, it was one of those things where, everybody thinks of The Hill and they think of food or they think of restaurants. We wanted to go past that. We wanted to get into the history of the neighborhood. And I think that was kind of throwing people at first. It was like, what do you mean you're not interviewing, every restaurant guy? It's like, well, there's 30 of those guys, and one restaurant guy says the same thing that the other guy does, says the same thing. So it was one of those things where I was really interested in trying to find the story of The Hill, and going back to the title, America's Last Little Italy, I was like, we have to explain to the audience why we're saying what we're saying. And I think that we do that in the film, in the second act, showing Polizzi and the steps that were taken. And then the third act, when we show The Hill today and how there's really no other neighborhood like this in America.
Yeah, it's very rare, obviously, for these sorts of ethnic neighborhoods to preserve their identity over the long haul. I remember being shocked, for example, going to New York City. I had a good friend who was living in Little Italy, and so I would go visit her periodically, and there were vestiges of Little Italy left, but primarily it was a Chinese neighborhood.
Yes.
It had been totally changed over the course of a couple of decades. And that's how quickly things can turn. So you're right. It's very rare. Did you encounter any other examples where there were a sort of the preservation of the specific character in other places in the US or in Canada, for example?
Well, I went off of the experts. And so the people that we interview in the film, Gary Mormino is a PhD professor from Florida. He had studied the Hill extensively in the 1970s. Angel Sita is in our film. He's a former president of Unico National. And I was really kind of using those guys, you know, because I sat down and I asked them, like, explicitly, like, is this the last Little Italy? And they're like, well, of course it's not the last Little Italy. There's a Little Italy in every state. But this one is very different than the other ones because it has kept its ethnic identity, because these people have passed the houses down from generation to generation. Like you said with New York, you know, it turned into Chinatown. But also there's a Starbucks and there's, you know, the Hill. These are Italian-owned businesses throughout the entire neighborhood. You know, there's not a Target on the Hill. You know, there's not a Starbucks on the Hill like this. So it's one of those things where, yes, I knew that the title of the film was probably going to draw from other, from other Little Italys. Well, what are you talking about? We have one in Philly. Well, we have one in Boston. We have one, you know, it's like, of course you guys do. But you, first off, a lot of these people don't even know the Hill exists. So that was a big thing for us, was to bring the Hill, to bring some publicity to the Hill, to show people that this place in the Midwest does exist. You think the second you think of Little Italy, you think of New York. But like you said, that's gone. I mean, it's not the way that it used to be. The Hill is almost like a time capsule where these things have, you know, nothing has really changed. We get into that in the film. It's like, you know, in the 60s, the guy was like, nothing changed on the Hill. You know, we had the Civil Rights Movement. We had this, we had this. You know, you got Vietnam, you have Martin Luther King. We're talking, you know, about Christopher Columbus. Like, this is not, you know, it's one of those things where the Hill stayed the same. And it's like that to this day.
We'll talk about some of the people who managed to help preserve the Hill in that form. But you already referenced the fact that you had to move fast, because a lot of the people who are going to be able to tell this story were disappearing very quickly.
Yes.
And you see that, you know, in the end credits, where you see all the people who you interviewed who have already passed. And I'm sure that's continuing to happen, people who you had shot.
Yeah.
So how, you know, again, that was something I'm sure was foremost on your mind, trying to get in there as quickly as possible in order to capture these memories. Was there any resistance by the older folk? You already know noted the fact that they didn't quite know what you were after, but did you get any pushback from people as far as sharing those memories?
Well, I mean, it was not really. They all, you know, there's one of the people in the film, Larry Tornetto. He's about 90-year-old Korean War vet, and we interviewed him about 2 weeks in. And when we left, he was almost like a little teary-eyed. He was like, you know, thank you guys for what you're doing for the neighborhood, because otherwise this stuff is going to be forgotten. And that was the whole reason why we did the film. You know, it was knowing that these people were passing away at a quick rate, kind of lit a fire under us to, like, okay, let's go do this right now. Like, let's not wait around. Let's just go do this right now. And So in terms of resistance, it's like they wanted to be a part of it. They didn't know what I was doing, but they wanted to be a part of it however they could. So that was a blessing for us.
It must be somewhat bittersweet in the sense that a lot of the people that are in the film are not going to obviously be able to see it, but their families will exactly. definitely appreciate the fact that you preserve those memories on their behalf.
Yes.
The thing that I think is most striking about the way in which the Hill managed to maintain its essential character is that it was the church who was really an absolutely central motive force in maintaining that cohesion. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of the church on the Hill and the priests who led that congregation?
Well, I mean, St. Ambrose is the hub of the Hill. You can't do a story on the Hill without St. Ambrose being a vital part. I mean, to this day, it's the most, probably important thing in these people's lives is that church. So we knew that was going to be an essential part. Getting into the fact that the initial church burns down and then the Italians come together, they build their own church. From there, it's always the central part of the community. The biggest part being in the 60s and 70s with Father Polizzi. During that time, Highway 44 was going to come through and cut through the neighborhood. Polizzi basically, gets the band together, gets everybody together, and is like, this is not happening. We're going to stop this. The highway ends up coming through, but he's able to get an overpass to keep the hill connected, whereas the highway was going to completely disconnect two pieces of the hill. This was extremely important because the people on the hill, and we get into this, a lot of them, well, first off, the hill is all they had ever known. They're either first or second generation Italians at this time. A lot of them, this is the first house that they've lived in. Now their house is going to get torn down. They're going to have to leave the neighborhood. Not only that, a lot of them don't drive. So a lot of them are walking everywhere on the hill because the hill is a self-sufficient neighborhood where, you have a grocery store and you have your shops and you have your barber shop. And there was no reason for a lot of these people to ever leave the neighborhood. At this point in time in the 70s, a lot of these people, they didn't even speak English. They still spoke in either a Lombard or Sicilian dialect, even after being here for all these years. So this was a huge deal on the hill. And basically Polizzi sees this and isn't going to allow this to happen. So he's able to get the overpass and is successful in that way. And this becomes, seen across the country and even catches the eye of Jimmy Carter, the president, who tries to get Polizzi to come to Washington, but he ends up turning him down and wanting to stay on the hill and preserve that legacy.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your own background. You did a terrific comedy short called Top Son that played at the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase and then also was invited to the St. Louis International Film Festival. And I'm sure that received lots of attention elsewhere as well. Making the transition to documentary, yes, you're a filmmaker, but you were used to using a script, working with actors, et cetera. How difficult was that transition to documentary? What did you learn along the way? And what's significantly different for you with regard to narrative versus doc?
Yeah, well, I mean, Top Son was shot in a mockumentary style. So it was a fake documentary that was shot sort of in a cinema verite type of way. Transitioning to the Hill, I knew there was two schools of thought at the beginning when this project came to us. Was, do we want to do it in a historical sense, or do we want to do it in a cinema verite sense where maybe we would find 10 characters on the hill, follow them around, and almost do like a vignette type of deal where you're following these people around getting, and maybe some of these stories would have come to fruition in that style. But I figured the most logical way of attacking this project would be in a historical documentary. I knew at the time when you're doing a subject like this, when you're doing a historical documentary, the comparison to Ken Burns is always going to be there. It's like a mob movie in Scorsese. It's like, if you're doing this, you know that it's going to get compared. So one of the first things that I wanted to do was not have the use of a narrator. I thought that the biggest thing that I wanted to do was have the story told through in-camera interviews and have that kind of weave subject to subject. And it's, you know, we got lucky in the editing room, myself and my editor, Steve, because I didn't tell, you know, you don't tell people what to say. You're just asking them the questions and hoping that they just naturally kind of segue you into subjects. So once we had our list of sound bites, I just basically studied that for a few weeks and in my head was making these transitions. So it's like one thing may have came first in a chronological sense, but if I had a natural segue to get me from one to the other, I was going to use that and then try and go from there. So for example, it's like in the film, someone naturally transitioned shotgun houses to prohibition. So I was like, well, we have to use that. That's perfect. Like that's a perfect segue. And so it was basically that times 20, times 25, you know, every single time. And we just got lucky with that. But I knew that if you used a narrator, it was going to be like, oh, well, these guys are just doing kind of like a Ken Burns type deal. And I didn't want that because I knew, like I said, with the subject matter, that comparison is always going to come up. But in transitioning from comedy to a documentary, yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I wanted to inject comedic humor to get some of those points in the film. And I think that we do that. But I really had to just, you know, kind of put on a different hat this time and read all these books and try and get all this information down and then go from there.
And I thought you did a terrific job. And you're correct. Ken Burns casts a very long shadow over any historical documentary. You're always going to be compared, but I think you did a nice job of differentiating yourself from the sort of stylistic approach that Burns, you know, it's great, but by the same token, it does have, falls into these patterns. You immediately know you're watching a Ken Burns film.
100%. So I was doing things like, you know, there's times where you hear my voice. It's like Ken Burns never does anything like that. Or, you know what I mean? It was things like that. And trying to separate ourselves from that connection that, you know, is always going to be there.
Now, have you caught the documentary bug? Are you intending to sort of toggle back and forth between narrative and documentary work in the future? Or was this a one-off? Do you think that you want to, you know, again, concentrate your energies in the narrative world?
I think I might have caught the documentary bug. We had a great time on this project. And I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where in doing this project, I learned so much. I mean, this is like you said, this is the first time not only that I had ever done a documentary, but a full length feature. And in doing that, we learned all of these things along the way that I think now we could kind of take those lessons and then apply them to another subject to maybe even make a better one. So I do think that a few more documentaries is definitely in our future.
Now, what are your plans? Do you have any projects that are percolating? Obviously, you want to get America's Last Little Italy out there into the world, and that's going to take some time for you. But is there something that is already sort of staged and ready that you hope to accomplish?
One of the historians in our film, he kind of has been... he's approached me in possibly doing another one of these historical documentaries on a subject that he's an expert on, a different neighborhood. And so we've kind of been looking into that. But at this point in time, trying to get the Hill documentary. That's the first and foremost. That's the focus of us right now. The other thing is with COVID, I don't know how soon we would be able to be welcomed into people's homes again. You know, myself and the two other members of our team. I don't know how soon something like that is going to be available to us to get into these people's homes, especially the elderly. I mean, that's, if you're doing these historical documentaries, the people that were there and lived it are kind of the most important interviews that you're going to have. And they're the ones that are being most affected by COVID. So I don't know, you know, the earliest that we're going to be able to do something like that, but I think it's definitely in the future.
Yeah. The world has changed and we don't quite know what the future holds on that front. We do know, however, that you have hopes to have America's Little Italy get further out into the world beyond just St. Louis. You noted that you were hoping for a national audience. So what are your plans? Do you have a sort of pattern that you hope to follow? Have you had any movement as far as interest from elsewhere yet?
We have had interest from some people talking about, you know, potentially being a sales agent and helping us in that way. But the entire time that we've been doing this project, I've said that it was a PBS film. I thought that this would be a perfect spot for PBS for us. So we do have someone that's been helping us get in contact with people at PBS, and they've been extremely receptive in the fact that they think that this is a good project for them. And a lot of people have called it an evergreen, as that, you know, it's one of those stories that, yes, it's timely, but it's also timeless. You know, the immigrant story right now is something that I think, you know, I think it's important for people to know about. And I think that it's going to continue to be that way. So, yeah, I think PBS, you know, is probably the spot that we would hope to land at.
Okay, well, fingers crossed that that happens and that people outside of St. Louis have the opportunity to experience it. We look forward to seeing more work from you. Joseph, do you also plan on staying rooted here in St. Louis, or are you thinking that you're going to have to eventually leave and relocate one of the two coasts?
I'm St. Louis to the core, so I'd like to stay here and, you know, continue to work here and bring projects, you know, to St. Louis.
All right. Well, again, we look forward to future work. Thanks again for the great film, America's Last Little Italy. And I hope lots of folks end up taking advantage and watching it during the showcase. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate it.